Wisconsin Conversation, real information. Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome to the second hour of Up North News for this Tuesday, September 27th. And Pat Kreitlow, Luke Mathers with us as well. And in a bit, Dr. Kristen Lyerly on the domino effect on Wisconsin of the repeal of women's health care rights and how a national abortion ban would make things even worse. That's coming up in just a bit. First, just a few other notes and news around Wisconsin. And I want to start first with just taking a bit of an issue with a story in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel this morning. And this has, you know, I don't know that there are many people I respect more than Craig Gilbert, who's been writing for the Journal Sentinel for the better part of forever, and is great on running the numbers and looking at historical trends. I'm just not a big fan of the framing of today's article, which says negative polling for Wisconsin's top candidates is setting the stage for unpopularity contests in the 2022 elections. Basically, it's, you know, who do you hate less among all of the candidates is the thrust of the story. And again, that may be what the data tells you, that, you know, the amount of people who are the politicians who are underwater, their job favorability numbers are, you know, the negatives are higher than the positives. I get that. I'm totally on board knowing that there is a lot of frustration out there with the voting population. Having said that, I just don't think it is extremely useful to make that the centerpiece of pretty much, you know, any story where we're asking the voters to choose for somebody. And the only way to overcome that isn't to feed the cycle of negativity, even though it's real, even though it exists, but to focus on instead on either what would candidates do or what have they done? What have they said? But by simply reinforcing, you know, what the negative attacks on each other, again, while real, isn't as helpful as casting any election as the lesser of two evils. It's kind of how we got to this mess in this country anyway. Now, we've been joking about politicians almost throughout human history. They're easy punching bags. But at any given point, we can take that too far, to the point where good people are afraid to serve. I've lost count of the number of people I have tried to recruit to run for legislature or some other office. But then when I tell them what all it involves, and they know that it's much more than saying yes or no and writing bills on things, it intimidates a lot of them. And they say, why would I want to be part of that negativity? So this is simply my plea that let's do less of that and let's get back into the service aspect of it.
And a little shameless plug for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian this afternoon. We're going to be joined by State Representative Francesca Hong, who's doing that very thing around the state right now, because she represents here the Isthmus in Madison. And she's doing a lot of work outside of her district to try to recruit candidates and get great individuals from around the state to get involved like she did in 2020. And so if you want to hear a little bit of that conversation, you're going to want to tune in to Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian this afternoon here on Civic Media, 2 to 3 p.m.
So there you go. Dueling Tangents with country media star sensation Luke Bryan joining them for the show. The problem is, have you gotten in trouble with that for that yet? Any trademark cease and desist letters or anything like that?
We are very specific about the and. So what are you going to do? Sue us? I haven't got a lawsuit yet.
So, you know, if the country star's middle name starts with an N and I go with Luke and Brian, I'm still risking legal trouble.
What am I going to say? That the subpoenas are unlawful or the lawsuit's unlawful? Come on, like...
Yeah, I mean, come on. What are you, Robin Voss? What's that about? Robin Voss will not be giving a deposition today ahead of the January 6th committee, which is scheduled to have a hearing tomorrow. So we'll continue to monitor that and see what if the Assembly Speaker is willing to aid in the attempt to find out what was really behind a violent insurrection against the United States. Assembly Speaker Voss can choose to be helpful in that endeavor, or he can cover up for an ex-president that he already doesn't like and has already, said and done terrible things about him. So, Robin Voss, you can be helpful, or you can just continue the problem.
And if you want
another, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, if you want to tune in for those hearings on January 6th tomorrow, Civic Media will be broadcasting them live beginning at noon.
Man, you're like an audio pop-up window.
I'm the housekeeping. Ads. I'm the housekeeping notes that just you're going to get them no matter what.
Yeah, I'm just afraid, like, if I say, and if you, if people email us, and then you'll pop right up and go, radio at upnorthnews.wi.com. You're just a pop-up ad. As I was saying, another former state legislative leader, Scott Fitzgerald, who also helped facilitate the fake electors meeting at the Capitol, is facing a potential ethics complaint for abusing his official privileges of sending mail to constituents now that he's a congressman. Take a look at these ads. Look for these. It's the story in the Wisconsin Examiner would be a great example. He sent, this is straight up campaign mail that's being sent with your tax dollars, and he's calling it official communication. I mean, it is evidence piece number one on why people do get cynical about these kinds of things. These are politicians who bring it on themselves. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us right after this break. You're up north. Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us normally on Wednesdays at in the 10 a.m. hour, along with Kirk Bangsted, for basically a reboot of the Wednesday night radio show that we all used to do together. And we talked about a whole variety of topics with guests and whatnot. This time around, we wanted to talk just in her capacity as an obstetrician gynecologist, who is also a legislative voice on behalf of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. And what prompted this was a letter that ACOG sent about the impacts of a proposed national abortion ban. So we're going to get into some of that from a health standpoint and what it means for healthcare around Wisconsin and things like that. So, Kristen, glad you're here. Wait, we're doing just this. So do I have to go with Dr. Lyerly, or do you go with Doc?
For you, Pat, you can call me Kristen.
Aw. I have to tell you, it's one of the things that I kind of had to get used to, meeting my wife in college and then med school and residency, that a lot of people just in our casual life, our friends, or not friends but acquaintances, will just call her Doc, and I'd never seen anybody call her Doc, and then people started doing it. I'm like, oh, that's right, you're a doctor, you're not just not just Sherry.
It's funny, and I mean, even Luke I think has a hard time just calling me Kristen.
Mm-hmm. It is that that respect that you've earned through, again, trust me, as somebody who has seen it directly, the training that y'all go through, you've earned every bit of it. And that's why your patients, really come to rely on you. And I don't doubt have a lot of questions about what's been in the news lately. Mm-hmm. And, again, everybody has an opinion. Everybody has a take on what the repeal of Roe v. Wade, will do, has done already in Wisconsin. But it was that ACOG letter about this that, kind of prompted this, because it's a proposal from Senator Lindsey Graham for an abortion ban at 15 weeks. I don't know why 15 weeks. Maybe mm-hmm. you can help us with that. And then the impact of it.
I don't think I can.
Yeah. Well, let's just start with that. For whatever reason, Lindsey Graham surprised a lot of people, especially a lot of Republicans who were trying to, change the subject here, mm-hmm. with a 15-week abortion ban. And yeah, one of the first things the letter says is that the proposal is arbitrary. A 15 weeks, it makes no sense. Or am I wrong? Is there something there to hang your hat on?
Well, I have to say that as a physician, none of it makes any sense, because to me, it's all part of the continuum of women's health care. So abortion is sold to us as the general public as a binary issue. Either you're for it or against it. But as a doctor, we're just taking care of our patients, and we are recognizing and acknowledging that things happen in the course of a pregnancy, whether it's a miscarriage or a complicated pregnancy or a complicated social situation. So to me, at 15 weeks, I mean, with regards to embryology and fetal development and all of those things, there is nothing magical about that 15-week number. That's just something the politicians seem to feel comfortable with.
And here's why, I think. I think that they have gotten so much mileage over the decades by treating abortion as if it is overwhelmingly used as a form of birth control by irresponsible people who can't, you know, plan ahead with birth control or whatnot, and that there's a long line out the door of women who found out they were pregnant, didn't expect it, and, you know, want an abortion on demand at any point during the 40 weeks of pregnancy.
Yeah.
And Kristen, I think that narrative, while it got them a Supreme Court that could repeal Roe, it still doesn't base it in real life.
They do love that picture of the welfare mom. That is true. But, you know, 1 in 4 women in this country will have an abortion in their lifetime. This is not an uncommon procedure. And it's something that is different for every woman, every family who seeks an abortion. So again, I have to go back to the medical perspective that this is just frank interference in the doctor-patient relationship. And I also think it's important to address, who is this legislation coming from? Lindsey Graham. What do you know about Lindsey Graham? I don't think abortion has ever been a threat in his life.
No, it's been a crutch. It's been, again, just a political issue. There's nothing personal about it to him whatsoever.
It's a stunt. And these stunts are literally killing people. You know, people are afraid to seek treatment for miscarriages. So imagine that you have a desired pregnancy that you lose in the first trimester. This is not uncommon. But you hear about this criminal abortion ban, and you don't know if you can go talk to your doctor about treatment because you've heard that the treatment is similar to an abortion. So are you going to be in trouble? And of course, here in Wisconsin, the criminal ban is only for physicians and people who provide abortion care. So women cannot be charged. But there's so much misinformation and so much fear that people are not getting the treatment that they deserve. And there's a giant physical effect and a psychological effect that goes along with that. It is so profoundly wrong. And that is why we have to stand up and fight against this.
I mean, even ACOG themselves looked at data, say, from 2008 and found that between 13 and 15 weeks of pregnancy, 6% of abortions took place. After that, only 4% of abortions happened after week 16, and 1.3% happened after week 21. Abortions during the third trimester, you know, after week 26 are exceedingly rare. And as you mentioned, you know, there's quite often some terrible tragedy involved in this. So all of this is to say that the data bears out that, you know, Lindsey Graham and other Republicans want to control women even before they know they're pregnant in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about the timing of this ban, because people who typically seek abortion care after 15 weeks are often people who have desired pregnancies. So adding insult to injury, and I'll use my former partner, and I'll call her name out, Dr. Anna Igler up here in Green Bay. She's been very vocal about her personal experience. She had a desired pregnancy. She had a hard time getting pregnant with her second child. And in the course of her pregnancy, was exposed to a common virus, cytomegalovirus, CMV, which is just a cold for most of us. But if you get sick at a certain point in the pregnancy, it's devastating to the fetus. And she went to her 20-week ultrasound, so excited to find out the gender of her baby, and instead found out that her baby had a problem that was inconsistent with life. Her baby wasn't going to survive. And she was forced to in the middle of COVID by herself, go to a different state to get the care that she needed. It ruined her ability to practice psychologically, the impact. She wasn't able to take care of herself, take care of her patients for years following this. So now she's found the courage to speak out because her voice is so unique and so important in this fight. These are the people who are affected the most, because the reason that they seek abortion care late in the pregnancy is not because they're reckless. It's because they have a problem.
You know, one of the talking points that really irks me, and I was looking at, you know, various myths about abortion, and one of them is the myth that having an abortion causes negative mental health outcomes, and that by banning abortion, they're preventing, you know, depression in women, that they'll turn things around once they have that baby that these politicians are forcing them to have. And there actually is very little evidence that abortion is associated with an increased risk of mental health issues.
Yeah, I have a theory about that. As someone who has cared for people throughout the time related to an abortion and then afterwards, my theory is this: people who receive compassionate, appropriate care throughout that episode in their lives actually do really well. But people who come into it with this stigma and have this internal fight because of this external construct that politicians are putting on their lives, telling them that they're bad people, but they know that they don't have options. They don't have choices. This is something that they have to do. So they have to live with that division in their head and in their hearts for the rest of their lives. So of course they are going to suffer because they feel guilty. It's the classic Catholic guilt that we feel about so many other things. You know, I'm Catholic. Well, I get it.
I remember it well.
There's no evidence for it, but I think it's very real in certain circumstances.
There's also the myth that most women who have abortions are childless. Again, you're trying to bring back Ronald Reagan's, you know, welfare queen, but the CDC data shows that about 60% of women who have abortions, a majority of women, already have a child or multiple children. Mm-hmm. So again, this is not about a birth control method. This is about where a woman is at a certain time in her life and how she wants to control her family as well as her body.
Mm-hmm. If I had a dime for every person I talked with who recognized that they didn't have the resources, the time, the money to have an additional child, these are moms. These are moms who have children. So yes, that's a really important point. And also, Pat, I think we have to talk about one more thing about timing. I hear conservative radio hosts, because I like to listen to them because they're entertaining, they say things like abortion up until the time of birth. And, you know, that truly does not happen. Abortions don't happen really after, say, 23, 24 weeks. Once a fetus reaches viability, at that point, it becomes a very complicated conversation with high-risk pregnancy doctors and perinatologists and cardiologists and a giant team coming on board to make sure that this mom and this fetus have the kind of care that they deserve. So there's no such thing as a 28-week abortion. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. If you have a delivery at that point, it is not an abortion. It is truly medical care for that dyad.
Here's the funny thing to bring it to today's campaigns and campaign ads is we're very familiar with past campaign cycles where that famous Republican term, late term abortion, is all the rage, and it tries to have these graphic descriptions of a late term abortion. You're not hearing that so much now because mm-hmm. they're going with they need that distraction away from the abortion issue, and so that's why you're seeing crime and crime and crime and more crime. But you know, I don't doubt for a minute that there won't be a cycle in the future as well where Republican messaging doesn't lean heavily on a graphic description of a procedure that just doesn't happen.
Not just graphic, but just wrong. You know, it's loaded with misinformation. It's loaded with ugliness and fear. And it's all based in control of people's bodies. So ultimately, politicians just need to get out of the exam room and leave these complicated decisions between patients and providers, whether it's related to pregnancies or preventive care or starting a new blood pressure medication. It doesn't matter. Politicians don't have the background or the information to be able to be involved in these conversations.
You know, we'll talk more on the other side of the break, but in the few seconds we have here, I think it's actually, I wouldn't be surprised if it's the case that rather the real increase in mental health or mental stress is the result of this decision and what women are going through now when they come see you or other docs.
Of course, that contraception, everything. I mean, it's the whole spectrum of women's health care. We are not getting the care that we need because of this fear and ugliness.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly here to prove that she's good for more than 70s song lyrics, but not to say that that won't play a role as well in our next segment. We'll be back here up north.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
You know that I'm proud and I can get the words out. Oh,
See, even in that song, Kristen wasn't singing along to. We talked about this song in the last hour and how Chevy uses it in these commercials with people singing along. And I said, nobody sings along to this song. And Luke said on air, oh, I bet Dr. Lyerly sings along to this song. And I said, let's bring it back and find out. And we watched you just now. And while your head was kind of moving, you were not singing along to the chorus of that song because nobody does.
I do on the commercials, though. I love Fleetwood Mac.
See, I had faith. I thought you were going to start singing, but not today. Not for this one.
I thought you were inviting me to come on the show every day. I want to be with you every
See,
day.
No, no,
hey,
no.
Remember, this counts. Is my chance. She sang.
This is my chance now before I forget. I told you somebody was going to make an appearance.
Hello, there's, Charlotte.
There is six-month-old Charlotte right there in the video feed. Hi, baby. You want to go back to mom? Okay. She's like, get me back to my mom. In her nice
what
pumpkin jammies.
Pumpkin.
Oh, she is adorable. We are talking with Dr. Kristen Lyerly about women's health, women's health care, women's health choices, options, and not having not just politicians, but a host of institutions make decisions on their behalf. Kristen, a tweet that I saw yesterday, let me get the source right. Caroline Kitchener covers abortion for the Washington Post. And she had a tweet yesterday that says, University of Idaho employees were warned Friday that they could be charged with a felony for talking about abortion because of the state's new abortion law. They were also told the university could no longer provide birth control, not just Plan B, but regular birth control. And then she puts up the flyer that or the email that went to university employees that said, since violation is considered a felony, we are advising a conservative approach here that the university not provide standard birth control itself. Well, who didn't see that coming? Who didn't see that outrage coming? Because that's a big I told you so right there.
I am speechless. Mm-hmm. We are providing a conservative approach to protect ourselves, but you guys are all on your own. That is just inexcusable. You know, first of all, Plan B is birth control. It's not an abortion pill. It prevents ovulation. It is regular old birth control. And I know there's a lot of confusion about that. So I think it's important to clarify that. But I spoke with a friend of mine in Oklahoma who had mentioned the same thing, that they have been cautioned not to talk about abortion, not to counsel on abortion. And that's a First Amendment violation. I mean, that's your freedom of speech that you are being told you cannot do, especially as a physician who is trained, and it is your obligation. It is your obligation as a physician to counsel your patients based on your training and evidence-based care and what your patient needs. So I am surprised that we haven't heard more about this, because these are statewide mandates not to talk about things that are based in science that have profound impacts on half of the population.
It is that chilling effect, which I do believe is completely intentional, because after all, we're talking about people that are trying to get certain books banned, you know, because of their content. So why wouldn't they be trying to, you know, stifle speech, even in the exam room, you know, involving doctors? Not to mention, you know, not being able to teach about certain subjects in their classes. This is really, we're heading into that realm where, look, I've been trying very hard on this program not to use the F word because it's extreme, but there's a lot of fat. Heart attack there.
I was a little worried.
When you look at, you know, what it is, what the definition is and what's being proposed here, that amount of government control over individual freedoms, including freedom of speech, is the reason you and others who would otherwise, you know, might be, as I like to say, simple country doctors are not staying silent.
Yeah, many of us are, though, because many of us are in situations where we can't speak out, where our jobs are at risk, or we fear that our personal safety is at risk. So I think if we didn't, I think many more of us would like to be able to speak out because we feel very strongly about this and so many other things. You know, and I have to say, along the lines of banned books, I spoke with a friend of mine yesterday whose eighth grade son has required reading, including the book Who Broke the Baby, which is all about the pro-choice movement and all the slogans that they use to destroy life. And this is like required reading in a school for eighth grade children. It was just so shocking to me. I don't know. Help me, Pat.
No, it reminds me, I mentioned Idaho, and you know, one of my daughters lives in Idaho with our other two grandchildren, and in a very small town up in the mountains. And I went to their public library, which was adorable. It's tiny. It's very quaint, kind of got that log cabin feel to it. But I went in there, and in the non-fiction, you know, social sciences section or whatever, where you find a lot of the current, you know, political books out there today, you could tell you were in a red state because every one of them was like, you know, biographies of Donald Trump and books written by Newt Gingrich. And I mean, there was nothing there in this public library that showed any sense of balance whatsoever for people that wanted to read more about, you know, things that are going on in the news right now. And while that wasn't a government mandate, it certainly told you, you know, what the impact of all of this, right-wing messaging does. Mm-hmm. That I don't doubt that, you know, somebody in that library would like to put some other books in there, but feels like they can't because don't want to be the next one getting a big backlash.
You're right. It's all about that lack of balance. And the irony is it affects rural communities so much more than it affects more populated communities. And I'm going to bring it back to OBGYN care because I have a special interest in rural obstetrics and making sure that people who are pregnant in rural areas, most of Wisconsin is rural. So people need to have a place where they can go and safely deliver their babies. And what we're finding here in Wisconsin is in the last 15 years, half of the rural obstetrical units have closed due to lack of staffing, lack of reimbursement. We don't have enough doctors and nurses to staff these places. So people have to drive further and it means their outcomes are worse.
The most recent example being Mayo, which somewhat abruptly halted obstetrics care and baby deliveries in Barron and is now referring everybody, you know, another almost hour down the road to Eau Claire. And at the end of the year, Mayo is going to end delivery services in Menominee, in Menominee, which is essentially a Twin Cities suburb. I mean, that's a part of the state that's growing. But as we've said before, Dunn County is also still, you know, a rural county in many ways, apart from the city of Menominee. But for Mayo to make decisions about not just Little Barron, but a midsize like Menominee tells you something dire out there about, you know, the supply of doctors and nurses and support staff. And that may not get any better once you bring in the chilling impact of an abortion ban, much less what we have right now.
Well, it's definitely going to get worse. I mean, first of all, we already have a problem. We don't have enough obstetrician gynecologists who are willing to practice in rural areas. That was even before COVID. Then COVID hit And we lost a lot of healthcare workers, doctors and nurses. And now in the OBGYN realm, or I should say women's health in general, because it's not just OBGYNs, it's family medicine docs and it's emergency medicine docs and it's nurse midwives. Those of us who provide care for people who can get pregnant are really thinking, is it worth it to be here in Wisconsin? Medical students are wondering, can I train in this state and get the appropriate education to be able to care for people? Residents are wondering, is this a place where I'm going to be able to get the training I need and be able to practice in the future if I'm constantly worried about the threat of a felony for providing standard of care medicine to my patients who deserve it? So we are looking at not only the crisis that we have, but something very dire down the road here in Wisconsin, and it will affect our rural communities disproportionately.
And if that happens and it becomes tougher to recruit, you know, any kind of doctors or medical staff to rural Wisconsin, it's not just going to be women's care. Like you said, it's going to impact healthcare across the spectrum. And the thing that's so noteworthy about this is, yes, there's so-called, you know, red territory. But on the whole, both in Wisconsin and in the United States of America, this is a pro-choice country. This is a pro-choice state where the, you know, somebody like Tim Michaels, the Republican candidate for governor, is wildly out of step with, mm-hmm. you know, the mainstream of public opinion. But because of gerrymandering and population distribution, we basically have minority rule.
Can we talk about Tim Michaels? Can we just emphasize? I hate to cut you off. I'm sorry, but I just get so fired up when you mention Tim Michaels, because he has said that his take on this 1849 abortion ban, this ban that was instituted a year after Wisconsin became a state, it really is a terrible, terrible law. But his take mirrors the 1849 ban, with no exception for rape and no exception for incest. But wait, he has also given lots of money personally and through his family foundation to organizations that don't even want exceptions for the life of the mother. This is an extreme view. But wait again, somebody must have said something to Tim Michaels that he shouldn't say things like that, because now he's saying, well, I think I would consider exceptions for these things. Like, really, what do you actually believe? If your faith is rooted here and this is what you believe in, then your words are inconsistent with what you are telling us you truly believe in. So what are you actually going to do if you get elected? It's pretty obvious to me. And I'm one who actually cares and has demonstrated that I care for women and about community building for decades. So I look at Tim Michaels and I just get so mad, because he's taking advantage of people and it hurts people. Ah!
This is somebody who has given to groups that even shocked me with how extreme they were. And as it just so happens, Governor Evers' campaign has announced that it's out with a new commercial knocking Michaels and his family foundation for donating to a group that tracks the cell phone data of women near abortion clinics. The ad mm-hmm. opens with a narrator saying, "Women are being watched, tracked through their cell phones." The narrator adds that Michael's Family Foundation funds a radical anti-abortion group that tracks the cell phone data of women who visit Planned Parenthood clinics and then tries to stop them. Mm-hmm. That is grotesque. And Michaels can say, well, I would sign in a bill for exceptions to rape and incest. But we also know he would sign one that goes further than the 1849. So let's not talk about the least that he would do. Let's talk about the most that he could do if given his druthers.
I just am so afraid of the potential. Every time I see a Michaels sign, I just want to go knock on that person's door and say, do you know what this sign means? Are there women do you care about women? Do women live here? Do you have children? Like, I really, truly don't think that people understand how radical and extreme Tim Michaels is and how dangerous he is for Wisconsin.
I'm going to take this last minute to say that last night we taped the first of several series of interviews that you have arranged with women who are running for seats in the legislature. We talked to three candidates yesterday, and then we're doing a couple of more of these, and we're going to schedule these for next week Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in our 9 a.m. hour. I basically turn the show over to Dr. Lyerly, and she does these wonderful interviews with these candidates who are running. Thank you for proposing that.
Thanks for letting me drive the bus. It's so exciting, Pat.
Well, it's been great to watch this unfold, especially you as a former candidate as well. You've really, you know, shown that these are people that, you know, you're watching for a reason. And so I urge people to listen to that next week. So, Kristen, yeah. Thanks so much. We'll see you with Kirk tomorrow. That'll be fun.
Thanks, Pat. Have a great rest of your day.
All right. You too. We'll wrap up this hour after this. You're up north. Here's a public service announcement. You're going to hear a lot. Get used to it, because even if you do something about it, not everybody has. And I'm going to badger you until you do. Voting is underway. People who had previously requested absentee ballots are starting to get them in the mail. They are already filling them out and returning them. So the first votes are already being cast for November. For those of you that did do that and you have your absentee ballot and you haven't filled it out yet, I again remind you to be extremely careful. You have to be careful anyway. You don't want to spoil your ballot. And by the way, if you do, you can go to your local clerk's office and get a new one. So don't worry about that, just try to be careful anyway. But on that witness envelope that it has to go into, just be sure you read it carefully, that the witness, who can be your spouse or, you know, any other trusted person, there's very few restrictions on who can be a witness, but just be sure they sign it. Be sure they put their address and their full address, including zip code, because as we've seen, the Republicans will stop at nothing to throw your ballot in the shredder, even if it's missing a zip code on the back of a witness envelope. It's amazing that we have an entire political class devoted to making it harder to vote, but those are the hoops we're going to jump through. So I'm going to remind you again that it is still possible to be in contact with your county clerk's office or your local election clerk and have them mail you an absentee ballot. If you fill it out and send it back or bring it in, you save yourself the trouble of maybe having to wait in line on November 8th. And then there will be in-person absentee balloting at your local clerk's office coming up shortly as well. Hours vary. So this is a good time to either check your local clerk's office, or if you don't know your clerk's contact info, you can get that at myvote.wi.gov. That is an amazing website. It will tell you what district you're in, who's on your ballot, if you're registered, how to go about registering, what you need to, you know, register in case you don't have a current driver's license or something like that. And also, if you know your local clerk, it will tell you who your local clerk is as well. So myvote.wi.gov. We spoke a few days back about the Legislative Audit Bureau and how this once highly regarded taxpayer watchdog is being used by legislative Republicans for audits that aren't independently evaluated so much as they're being used as partisan fodder. Well, guess who's at it again? The Republican co-chairs of the audit committee now say they are seeking information about Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and his security detail just 6 weeks before an election. Seems like very curious timing, don't you think?
That seems very political.
And not only that, but isn't it a weird time to take a break from the 10-month paid vacation that you put yourself on?
Wait. I thought, was it Senator Chris Capenga that said, you can't do any work at the legislature this close to an election? Come on,
yes.
Republicans.
Yes, that is exactly it. And what makes it more suspect, and would it be even less ballsy if it weren't for the fact that this same group has refused to lift a finger to investigate how Michael Gableman spent more than $1 million of taxpayer money for a Keystone Cops level investigation into the 2020 election. If you think the roles were reversed, Do you not think Republicans would be looking into that? But they don't want an audit of Gableman's investigation.
No, the Democratic version of Michael Gableman would not have made it out of the Brookfield Library after using that as their place of work for the first 2 months of that quote-unquote I word that I don't like to use. Yep. Because literally they would have already been taken to task for that. And so the fact that Michael Gableman got away with spending as much money and hiring, I don't understand how he was able to hire conservative attorneys at like $500 an hour. James Bopp was getting $500 an hour of Wisconsin taxpayer funds to represent Michael Gableman in open records lawsuits that he knew he was going to lose because he threw out the records or just didn't keep them in the first place. And the fact that this audit committee is going to review what the state patrol, they're anti-cop with this, because the state patrol is who determines the security detail for our governor and lieutenant governor, regardless of party.
Before we get too deep into the costs of Mandela Barn security, let's ask ourselves for a second. What might necessitate a higher level of security for the state's first ever black lieutenant governor? And by the way, I'm sure that this new, not at all racially tainted attack won't lead to even further reasons to increase security around the lieutenant governor. But I could be wrong. I don't think I am. And look, does that mean that somebody like Mandela Barnes gets a pass on having his expenses looked at? Of course not. But is the timing awfully convenient? And again, much like the 2020 election, is the quote unquote evidence flimsy at best for doing this? Oh, you betcha.
Yeah.
And I
didn't know this, but the lieutenant governor just finished his third triathlon, Pat. Did you know that over in like the last week
that,
or two?
Yeah.
He finished his third triathlon. And so while he was training, yes, he still needed security details. So if you're really going to drudge up what is going on and how the 35-year-old or 30, I apologize, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, I don't know your exact age. I know you're in your mid-30s, I believe. And the fact that he's going and running these marathons or triathlons is not something that he should have to hang up while he's lieutenant governor. If the fact that the state patrol is saying that he needs the security detail because there are credible threats out there and he is going about his life outside of just his regular duties as lieutenant governor, that's part of what he gets to do for the 4 years. I don't understand this. Like, I do not get how this is something that is trying to be used as political fodder when, like you said, Gableman, and then you got Assembly Speaker Robin Voss just outright saying, well, these subpoenas by the January 6th House Select Committee are just, this is too partisan. They wanted me to respond by Monday for an interview. Like, he authorized hundreds of unlawful subpoenas for Michael Gableman as well, and now a credible law, the subpoena that's coming out of the January 6th Committee is seeing a lawsuit by Robin Voss. It's ridiculous.
There's one thing to keep in mind about both Michaels and Gableman. If either one of them would like to start now training for a triathlon, I think we could take up a collection to make sure that they have a security detail as well, and a defibrillator, perhaps. But if they, you know, want to engage in a triathlon or any activity like that too, maybe they need to run a mile in Mandela Barnes' shoes.
They get enough of my taxpayer dollars. I'm not donating any more to the two of them.
I'm just saying, just to see it. Comes back to what I said before about we need like one lane in the Olympic swimming pool and one lane on the Olympic track meet. Yeah, let's put Tim Michaels in there. And, you know, then let's see how critical he or Ron Johnson or somebody else can be. We'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about something we alluded to earlier in the hour, and that is the GOP messaging on crime and crime and crime and crime. And why could this be? That's next. You're up north.